just for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And it's, we do a high volume work, and we've encountered some substantial problems locating certain defendants. The original bill that you have before you had three sections. The first was viewed as more or less a housekeeping matter. It codified existing procedure and provided it may be something that we'll want to try again someday, but we didn't want to jeopardize Section 2. And Section 2 provides that in the foreclosure of a mortgage on a single-family residence, and that's important, and where no deficiency judgment is sought, the service procedure is modified on the defendants that we serve. Basically, it provides that the amendments provide that after one attempt at personal service at the last known address of a defendant, and this could be the mortgagee, it could be a lien holder, it could be a county, it could be any number of entities, after one attempt at personal service, then service can be accomplished by certified and regular mail and by publication for 4 weeks. Because publication takes so long and is really more expensive than personal service, I can't foresee any mortgagees trying to foreclose a mortgage without using personal service if it can be used. But this would modify that procedure. We have cases that are 2 years old where people have abandoned, for all intents and purposes, any interest they have in the property, but we can't find them. And this would just speed that process up. We get the property back into state hands, back into productivity, and deal with some other very serious problems we've had.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Brand?
John, we've kind of discussed, I guess, the problem with the properties you've got in part of the world I know best, in Southeast Portland. Can you maybe give us a status report in terms of where you folks are at in terms of properties in Multnomah County that you're still holding that may be subject to foreclosure proceedings in terms of, I've heard it expressed that, you know, that numbers we're talking about, 1,500 or more. Is that still the figure that you're dealing with in Multnomah County, or has it been reduced?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, for the record, John Mangus, Department of Veterans Affairs. I can't give you an accurate count today on Multnomah County. We have roughly 1,600 properties in the process of foreclosure. Half of those are in the foreclosure unit at the Department of Veterans Affairs. The other half is at the Justice Department right now. On an average, we bring roughly half of those accounts current. The process is slowing down. We have roughly, at the present time, 1,250 state-owned properties that have gone through the process or been accepted back with a deed. Of those, approximately 400 are in escrow closing that have been sold. There's another 100 that are out on bid right now. 300 that are awaiting the next bid period cycle, and about the same number that are being fixed up and appraisals being sought right now. We have an inventory of properties that have gone through this entire procedure of 270 right now. Some of those properties are leased, rural properties in eastern Oregon, in order to protect our water rights, farm deferrals. It has improved since we talked about it 2 years ago, where we had well over 1,700 properties on hand at that time. Our problem and our support for 2198 is the speeding up the process in order to get that property back to where the state can get it back on a paying basis. It was referred to that on an average, it takes us roughly 10 months in the ballpark to foreclose an account. And that's substantially down from 2 years ago when we talked. But 10 months is a long time And the department, almost every mortgage, every foreclosure we address is on a property with a note mortgage. The department did not start using trust deeds until 1983. It's a long process. We have one person totally devoted to skip tracing within the agency. And these are individuals who have just, you know, picked up and left the property without, you know, notice. We feel like we've become, you know, fairly proficient at locating people. But it's, you know, it's a long process. It's time-consuming. It's expensive. 2198 is estimated that we could reduce our time from the date last payment to the time that was bid in at a sheriff's sale by 1 month. The fiscal impact on that was estimated that that would represent a savings to the department of approximately $400,000 during the biennium. That may be more. It costs us on an average $18 a day to keep a residential property on inventory. Every bill that we introduced, or this bill introduced on behalf of the department by the Attorney General, are all to address the problems that we've been dealing with the last couple of years. And this is a major, major concern to the department.
What was the reason? Were you bound by statute in terms of using a mortgage as opposed to a trust deed up until 83, or was that just the practice of the department?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, probably like everything else we did for 40 years, we were a day late and a dollar short of doing anything smart. And where most lenders had entered into where they were using trust deeds, you know, earlier, the department continued with the note and mortgage, and we even considered addressing that issue until early 1980s. I don't know why, but we did a lot of things wrong, and of course you're aware of it. All of you are that we're here.
Well, I'm not here to beat that horse to death any further. There are people who've done a better job of it than I have. But on a somewhat related topic, last session there was a change in the statutory period of redemption, which had been 1 year, and had been 1 year for hundreds of years, I think, under common law and then statutory law. And apparently, at least to the best of my knowledge, you folks have been identified as those who sought to change that statutory period to 6 months. And that was something which happened not in this committee, but happened on a concurrence vote in the in another committee. And that kind of got my nose out of joint, because I kind of think of Judiciary Committee as where we deal with those kind of land transactions, foreclosures, etc. Has that change in the redemption period had any impact on your ability to process these matters? I've heard that the courts have been reluctant to apply that change in the statute to any pre-existing mortgages.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Springer, perfectly honest, that was not introduced by the department. The redemption period, 1 year, 6 months, we sell it subject to redemption. I don't think that's been applied by the courts on any mortgage that was in existence where that would be applicable to, as far as the department's portfolio. So I apologize if you know, that got to you, but that was not at the request of the department. Yeah, I think it was done to benefit the department, but it has no application on those properties that have been foreclosed on and sold, all sold subject to redemption.
So if this committee were to reconsider the action that was taken in the 85 session and restore the 12-month or one-year period, that wouldn't have any negative impact on your business?
On the loans made you know, after that date, if we ever got into the type of economic situation that we're in today, you know, maybe. I don't see where it's you know, know, our problems started with mortgages primarily made 78, 79, and 80. And that six-month redemption has not been applied to those properties.
Thank you. Just so I'm clear on it, can you tell me, if it wasn't at your request, who did request it? How did the process work through? If it hasn't been used and doesn't seem to have an effect, how did we get it into the statute?
To tell you the truth, I don't know.
On my bills.
I think the initially it was introduced in the Senate, I think done with the intent that it would help the department and, you know, the problems that we were trying to address since 81. But as it worked out, you know, it didn't have any applicability to mortgages issued prior to the date of the law.
Okay. I do have a question, perhaps it's to your counsel. On the proposed amendments and the original bill, you say where at least one attempt at personal service at the last known address is successful. It's an interesting process, but you know what happens if does there have to be a good faith effort on that one attempt? What if I knew that the person works or isn't there during the day, and I just happened to go during the day? I tried to personally serve, but gosh, he wasn't there. How do you keep that to be a legitimate process?
I think the thing that will really work to keep it legitimate is that we're far better off if we can achieve personal service. 4 weeks of publication delays the process substantially. It costs a lot more. We really want personal service. We will, and I think every lender who's foreclosing a mortgage would prefer to have personal service. It's faster. We use process servers, sheriff's offices, and what have you that I think are bound to make a good faith effort to locate someone. This one attempt at personal service was put in largely to deal with some problems that the mortgage bankers and private lenders had with the bill. They were concerned that if we just did mail, that the mail might be delivered to one of their branch offices and they wouldn't even see it in their legal operations until after the 30 days had passed. For most entities that would need to be served, one attempt at personal service will be fine. They'll have a registered agent, or they'll be at the residence, or will know their place of work. It's just the people that really have what I describe as very hypothetical interests in the property. They've already abandoned it for all intents and purposes, and they've moved to Alaska or Oklahoma or Lord only knows where.
Well, okay, following on that then, if where service didn't work and you went by the mail process, affidavit of mailing, return of unsuccessful personal service, mixing apples and oranges, but when you talk about mailing, are you talking about certified mail? It doesn't specifically say.
It does say, if you look in the section of the first paragraph of section 2, subsection 1, says by mailing copies of the summons and complaint by both first class and certified mail with return receipt requested to the last known address of the following persons. That's on page 3 of what I've just given you.
Okay. Further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Counsel.
I have a question addressed to Counsel. I have the original bill here, and I'm looking at page 2. I notice in the notice section, judgment creditors, what about the second mortgagees? Would you also notify them?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Under what section would you notify them?
Well, under the amended section that we're talking about, it would be under section 2, subsection 1, paragraph B.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address Representative Springer's question regarding the six-month redemption period. That was originally introduced last year in the Senate during discussions on Senate Bill 17, which is a large comprehensive bill, a suggestion was made by Senator Simmons that, you know, wouldn't the if the redemption period was reduced to 6 months, you know, would that help the department? The discussion that went seemed like for months, and it was introduced and was made part of Senate Bill 17. And you know, the intention, you know, was good. It has not benefited the department. We have made there have been no properties redeemed under that so far this year, and there were none redeemed under those provisions in 1986. That's how it started. Senate Bill 17 and a whole bunch of things flying back and forth, and it got in there with the intent to help. It hasn't had any impact on DVA.
From that, I guess, would you object to an amendment getting it back into the way it was, and from 6 months to a year, from what you said, it seems to...
Yeah, I don't know how that impacts other lenders. You know, they may have some comments on that, but as far as the department's concerned, our troubles started long before that became available to us.
Question?
No, that's fine. I'm as compliments of the good side. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate that clarification. The exact history is a little murky. I don't know if we'll ever exactly figure it out. I just know when it came back on a concurrence vote, it seemed inappropriate, the process or the procedure that was employed. So now that we've got a chance to correct that, and it's not going to negatively impact you, I personally am inclined to do so.
It, I don't know, well, Senate Bill 17 last time was, that was a murky issue anyway.
Okay, thank you. Michael, Marcus? Oh, excuse me. We've got plenty of your comments, so I assume you wish to testify on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michael Marcus, Legal Aid, Portland. As you can see from the date on my written testimony and on the mock-up, this was prepared long ago. I don't know how recently it reached the committee. I came down with another set. I've had only a brief moment to look at the amendments just offered. They, disregarding Section 3, our major concern is along the lines that you were inquiring about. What about the person who isn't home when there's an attempt at service? We would address that by requiring, as with the eviction summons, that a copy be affixed to the door before the process server leaves, just to increase the likelihood of actual notice, and then permit service by mail. We agree that first class and certified mail is the appropriate way to maximize actual notice and also facilitate proof. We would also allow for the situation in which there is, in spite of diligent efforts, no address known, no workable address, and allow the plaintiff to pursue this form of substituted service without a court order, which is what I understand this to be all about, in the event that diligent inquiry failed to locate the defendant thereafter. But we would make the change which appears on page 2 of our mock-up, which would require that the affidavit demonstrate compliance with subsection 2, namely that if there was an attempt at personal service, that the summons and complaint was also, a copy was also attached to the door, and if there was a failure to locate them, there would be a statement in the affidavit as to what efforts were pursued, so that there would be a record, a statement under oath as to what was done. So it goes a little bit further than the proposed amendments, but I think they're at least in the ballpark. Our concern is that there are people who could be hurt both because of a lack of actual notice of any kind or because of an unfamiliarity with written materials. We're talking about residences here. We can be talking about elderly people, people who are less likely to understand the import of a piece of paper that comes in the mail than they are something that is handed to them formally. And for all those reasons, we think that we shouldn't be so anxious to discard the time-honored means of service when you have something as important as what may be your family home at stake.
Thank you.
I should say that now that the suggestion has been made to return to 1 year, that may make a substantial difference in the ability of a family that's temporarily lost its ability to keep up payments to redeem its home, and we would certainly be in favor of a return to the 1 year redemption period.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be sure to state your name for the record, too.
Yes. My name's Eric Yandel from the debtor-creditor section of the Oregon State Bar. I have previously submitted 4 or 5 pages of comments on the original bill that I believe Mr. Taylor has in the file. I've had an attempt here, or an opportunity just a few moments to look over the proposed amendments to the bill. I still have some problems with it. Our section has no opposition to the change in Section 1, either in the original bill or the bill as amended. But I still have some problems with excusing the normal service activities that precede mailing or publication. There are several Oregon cases that set out a number of steps that you must undertake before you can get a service by publication. Things like checking with the utilities, asking the neighbors, things that are just as easy, if not easier in some cases, than obtaining personal service on someone. This would excuse that. You expressed some concern about what constitutes a good faith attempt, and while I'm sympathetic with what the Department of Veterans Affairs is under, I don't think that one attempt, just it could be completely unwitting, just going out there in the middle of the day and attempting to find somebody home and not knowing if they're ever going to be home, that would be a good faith attempt, perhaps. I don't think it's likely to be abused, but consciously, but it could be abused in practice. Another problem that the section has is what constitutes the last known address. And what I'm thinking of is the very, very common situation where someone has a judgment lien. And the judgment liens are good for 10 years and may be quite valuable depending upon how much is left on the mortgage. But during that period of time, the judgment creditor is likely to have moved somewhere. And just because the creditor's address might appear in the court files, which would be the easiest place to find it, but the last known address then would just mean you send somebody out there, knock on the door once, it's not the guy, and so you mail, and by then the post office is no longer forwarding it, and that's a problem. There ought to be, under the law as it presently exists, additional duties would apply that would require a foreclosing party to look a little further. And I don't think the section or the bill as amended takes care of that problem. Another problem that I've expressed in my earlier comments and has not been addressed in these changes is what constitutes a legal representative. Again, taking the situation where you have a judgment debtor, the attorney's address is very likely to appear in the records, the judgment lien records, the docket. And it would be very easy for someone who wanted to foreclose to just go down and get the attorney's address. The attorney's likely to be findable, even if his or her client is moved. You serve that attorney either by personal service or mail, and all of a sudden there's an obligation imposed upon the attorney to run down a person whom he may no longer represent and may not have represented for years. Again, you've shifted the burden from the party foreclosing who wants the benefit of the foreclosure to someone else. And I think that opens up some serious possibilities for malpractice claims. Personally, I just assume keep those at a minimum. There are plenty as it is. Those are the major comments I'd have on them. There are a couple of other comments that are in my written materials that I don't propose to go over.
Appreciate that. Questions?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's any way for these folks to get together. So a lot of information obviously has come forward, amendments. I would assume that you would extend to these folks the same opportunity if they can meet and confer and find some common ground.
Well, it would be my intention to have the proposed Department of Justice draft put into LC form and to get at some of Michael's comments about notice, because I have some concerns on that process too. There's got to be some documentation of this to the good faith. From the lien side of it, I'd appreciate it if you perhaps could share some thoughts with Clint here, Gruber from the DVA. Maybe, Clint, if you could help coordinate this. And to Representative Springer, I think you've raised some points that we need to address in amendment form and get into the bill. And since I don't want to conceptually do that because I want to make sure it's right, then that holds us up from moving the bill tonight anyway. So let's make sure when we do, we have something that has all the parts into it. I'm not sure we can address everything you just mentioned as far as legal representation and the lien process, but let's make an attempt at doing that.
I have talked with Ms. Calvin and voiced these concerns, and she proposed some language, and I discussed it with her on the phone. My comments are still basically the same. I think if you leave the bill as in its present form, even with the amendments, you run the risk of it being declared unconstitutional. And I'm very sympathetic to, I do a lot of mortgage foreclosure myself, and I'm sympathetic to the desire to at some point just say, okay, that's enough. You know, we got too many people out here with tangential interests, most of whom really don't care if you really got right down to it. But the fact of the matter is, once you get into due process questions, you're not doing your client any favors by taking shortcuts. And therefore, I think if you provide in legislation that encourages the taking of shortcuts, you run the risk that sooner or later it's going to run afoul of due process and somebody's going to raise it. And I think that the present law, the due process analysis, provides you with a sufficient way of getting to publication, and why take the chance? I'm very happy to discuss that with the Department of Veterans Affairs. I have, okay, and will continue to do so.
Well, we can arrive at that policy decision after we've had the bill hand engrossed, so we know what we're doing, and LC go through it and try and adjust the server end of it and some of Representative Springer's issues. And then if they can't resolve it, then we've got to make policy judgments as whether in your mind we're going to take shortcuts or preclude that. So,
thank you.
Is that... okay. Just for the record, we've got the acknowledgement from the director of DVA that they'll work together and try and resolve the issues to see if we can move forth on the legislation. Is there anybody else that wants to testify on this bill? Thank you. In that case, we're going to close the work session and public hearing on House Bill 2198. And, Council, if we can try and address some of those concerns that we raised on that bill in a timely fashion, that would be appreciated. I'll give you that back.
Sure.
The only other agenda item we have is a public hearing only on House Bill 2549, of which the sign-up sheet, Alan, or you want Michael, or
for the record, my name is Michael Magnus, and I'm here to testify on House Bill 2549 on behalf of the Oregon State Bar Debtor-Creditor Section.
Okay, I got a question before you start. I've got amendments here. Are these amendments yours?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, then I'd rather hear from the original proponent of the bill first. and give them an opportunity to speak on before we immediately jump ahead to proposed amendments. Sorry about that. Thanks, Dave.
Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee, for the record, Dave Barrows, the Oregon League of Financial Institutions, representing the United Financial Lobby. We are here today, obviously, in support of 2549, which is the bill we asked this committee to introduce. Very simply, what this bill does is indicate that where a judicial foreclosure of a trust deed on residential property occurs, the beneficiary can obtain a deficiency judgment for back taxes owed when a couple of things occur. One, there's a judicial foreclosure, and secondly, the notice of sale indicates clearly that the grantor of the trust deed may find themselves in a position of having a deficiency judgment rendered against them for back taxes only.